Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, I want to welcome the superintendent, the manager, and the chief of security at the Skinwalker Ranch, Thomas Winterden, Jim Morse, and Brian Arnold. Gentlemen, how are y'all tonight?
Great. It's good to see you, Chris. This is Jim.
Welcome, all of you. Thank you for taking the time to join us. I know you guys must be super busy, exhausted. But I am so excited because for me, Skinwalker Ranch is one of the most fascinating places in the world. I mean, from anomalous lights and UFOs to strange creatures, electromagnetic phenomenon, and a whole host of other strange occurrences. And tonight we're going to discuss not only the new History Channel series, The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch, but I'd like to get some of your personal insights and experiences, or at least as much as you can talk about. First, I'd like to start with a little bit about each of your backgrounds and what got you involved with the ranch. And we'll just go in the order of Thomas, Bryant, and then Jim. So let's start with Thomas.
Well, my involvement with the ranch actually began with Jim. I owned a small motel, and Jim happened to stay in it on his way out to the ranch when Brandon first purchased the ranch. And we struck up a conversation and found out that I was a general contractor here in Utah, and so he asked me if I would come out and do a property inspection for them. And there was a lot of disrepair in the facilities and some work that needed to be done, so I assisted them with getting that done, and then Brandon asked me if I would just stay on and continue to run the ranch as a superintendent.
And Brian.
So I've known Brandon for the better part of probably 28 years. We met when we were young teenagers, and I've just been a friend and confidant of Brandon's for a long, long time. And, you know, he just trusts me, and I have some of the skill sets that he's looking for somebody that heads up the security efforts at the ranch. And so when he purchased it, he asked if I would come out and oversee some of that, and it's just kind of morphed into what it is. But yeah, my history with Brandon is long, and he's trusted me and known me for a long, long time. And for him, that's the most important thing, is trust and loyalty.
Very good. And Jim.
Thanks, Chris. I have known Brandon for an excess of 20 years. As I tell people, what I do for a day job is real estate development. If you're familiar with Salt Lake City, we developed the towers at Southtown, which was a culmination of hotels and Class A office buildings. And I was one of Brandon's clients, and I'd like to think over the years we established a trust level to the point that he allowed me to go out to the ranch. And I've always had a real interest in the Native American culture. And so going out to the reservation or the basin out there, it was a natural. And what's come out of that is obviously the close relationships that I've got with Tom Winterton and Bryant. And it's been a real joy to get out there and get acquainted not only with the community, but to associate with some of the Ute members of the tribe. So, yeah, as Brandon always says, we're just getting warmed up.
Now, the name of the ranch, Skinwalker, it gets its turn from a supernatural Native American myth of supposedly the Navajo that possibly may have even cursed the area to have it be affecting things the way it is now. Is that your understanding of the history of the land?
Yes, there's the lore of the Skinwalker or the Shapeshifter, and as you alluded to, back in the middle 1800s, there was a skirmish, obviously, that went on between the Navajo and the Ute, and good or bad, you know, all these tribes don't get along, and the Ute at that time utilized a lot of the Navajos as slaves, and that's where it came into the curse. The Navajos cursed this particular piece of property, this easement. Now we call the Skinwalker Ranch.
And Thomas, do you have anything that to add to possibly any of the history or lore of the ranch?
Yeah, I think it covers it pretty well. When the stories that have been handed out to us, it's just that in the mid-1800s, when the Utes joined forces with U.S. soldiers to drive the Navajos out, some of the Navajo shaman cursed this ground with the curse of the Skinwalker, this demonic being, as a kind of retribution for being chased off. And so that's the lore that's been handed down. And as you know, you get online and start searching, it's not hard to quickly find that there's a lot of stories and a lot of accounts of individuals encountering this shape-shifting entity, the Skinwalker. And so obviously out at the ranch, we're taking a more scientific approach. The cultural always plays in. You have to take these curses and that into account. And but we're really trying to get behind the science. You know, what's really going on? Is there really a Skinwalker? Can we get proof or evidence of it? That kind of stuff.
Anything to add to that, Brian, before we move on?
Well, these guys have covered it pretty well. It's an interesting thing, and being around, having some of the Native Americans come onto the property and interact with them, they take it very seriously. It's nothing, in fact, a lot of them don't like to necessarily talk about it because it is so ingrained in their culture as, it's not a positive thing. They don't look at Skinwalkers as a positive thing. It truly is, call it a witch doctor, call it a witch that takes on that shape, call it, a cursed being or whatever it is. They take it very seriously. And so with that, we hold their respect for both that area as well as, their understanding of what it is.
Now, each of you, before you came onto the ranch, I'm wondering how you felt about the lore and the stories and supernatural in general. I'd like to start with Thomas. How did you feel before you came onto this thing?
So coming onto the ranch, I was deeply a very strong religious individual, strong religious beliefs. And so I believed in like spirits and the afterlife, that type of thing. But as far as like the supernatural, the paranormal, the Skinwalker, those kind of things, I didn't put a lot of stock into it. I also didn't believe that these spirits that I do believe in spirits and the afterlife, but I believed in their limited ability to be able to interact with this realm, to go from one realm to another. I didn't really believe in, I was very skeptical. So I came on as a very, very skeptical non-believer.
And after your experiences, how do you feel now?
So the ranch, here we are 4 years later, and I have had, the ranch has forced me to examine every belief, every core belief that I've held. And I have to say, I'm a firm believer that there is paranormal or supernatural things going on the ranch. Now I'm of the belief that paranormal is simply, things that we don't have science to explain yet, I like to say that, we used to attribute lightning to, the gods rolling around throwing lightning bolts around in the sky, and as science evolves and we start to learn the science behind it, it becomes less supernatural and more known. And so my hope with being associated with the ranch is that these things that we call paranormal right now and supernatural, we can start to learn the science that governs them and take it more out of the supernatural and paranormal realm into a known scientific realm that is understandable.
Very good. And how about you, Bryant?
So pretty similar to what Thomas has said. I think I was more of an agnostic when it came to this stuff. I didn't have necessarily a disbelief in it, but I had never really had any experiences to affirm, any of the, what you want to term as paranormal. You know, that term gets thrown around a lot, and it's, I think it's a big blanket to throw over a whole bunch of unexplained things, as Thomas mentioned. But yeah, I'd never had any experiences. And so for me, I'm a very, I don't know, I need to see it to believe it type of an individual. Not that I'm not going to believe in it, but I want to experience things myself before I chalk something up to something, you know, outside of the realm of normal understanding. And so, yeah, I came into it. As I said, I've been a friend for Brandon's for a long time. And when he told me he was going to be purchasing some ranch in the Uinta Basin, I kind of gave him a strange look and said, why? You know, because I'd never grown up hearing the stories, or knowing much about the place. And so, you know, you inherit a specific narrative of the place from books. And then I read up on it a little bit to try and figure out what he was doing. And so, you know, it intrigued me a little bit. And so I just decided, sure, you know, I'll come out and check it out. But I'm going to determine for myself whether or not, you know, all the stories and everything is necessarily even has any validity to it.
And Jim, how did you feel?
You know, I heard a statement this morning that said, we all need to stay humble by what we don't know. And that really kind of came to mind when I started to think a little bit about that location, the Skinwalker. I don't think that it's just on the ranch. I think it's very concentrated on the Skinwalker Ranch with these ley lines and the gravitational pull, the concave of the ground. I think there's probably a history there, a genealogy there in regards to some of the dysfunction, the domestic issues that took place, the buffalo soldiers. There's just a countless amount of things that happened on that ranch that that have happened. And unfortunately, I think that there's a synergy that goes along, you know, with that. So when Brandon asked me to go down there initially, you know, you being in the real estate development business, you try to approach the ground with a level of humility, a level of harmony. I'm not trying to be sacrilegious here. I've never really gotten into organized religions, but I'd like to think that I'm reasonably spiritual. You know, you pick up a frequency between two people when they meet. I feel the same way about the property, the ground. And so I go in there with a prayer, a level of respect. I try to embrace it as if it's alive. And so I try to embrace that ground with a level of reverence. I haven't gotten into all the episodes. A lot of it, from what I'm hearing, is a lot of the science. But I was told yesterday that one of our good friends, one of the native medicine practitioners, went up there and prayed over the ground, which was pleasing to hear. But I'm excited about the association with the family, we call it. So I'm very open, but I do believe that there's a level of spirit out there that is watching us and how we handle and how we approach the property. So I'm pretty humble about it, to be honest with you, Chris.
One of the strange anomalies that occurs there is the electromagnetic anomalies and how it affects electronics and technology. Now, Travis Taylor, an aerospace engineer, was brought in to help with research all this. And in one of the first episodes, you were looking at some electromagnetic anomalies. Now, I'm wondering, now you were talking about how often this happens, but I'm wondering really how often does this happen and how much equipment have you lost over these electromagnetic anomalies? Let's start with you, Thomas.
So it happens weekly. There's not a single week that I'm on there that at least once or twice during the week I do not have some type of problems with electronics, whether it be my phone. Last week I headed over to Homestead 2, had 96% battery on my phone, and within 2 minutes it had drained and turned itself off. That's a significant power drop. We're constantly battling. I mean, just in the last week, you're trying to figure out, why is this camera turning itself on and off? Why when the other seven cameras are running just fine, do we have one persists in turning itself off? And the thing that drives you crazy is it usually lines up with the most inopportune times. And I've seen this on the ranch. I've seen this in my house. I was explaining today to some people, I think it was online. I lose track now. I can't keep track of all this, but you know, people question, they see the show, and like when we have that drone out there, that thermographic drone, $35,000 drone that won't connect and go up. And then you see the criticism of, well, the network's drone was up filming that. Well, you know, last week when we saw Caleb's phone going crazy on the episode, that was real. We caught that in the moment. That was not reenacted. That was on the spot. His phone starts going crazy. Well, anytime that happens, the rest of us check, you know, is my phone doing that? And we check our instruments, and it doesn't affect all the equipment the same. It doesn't, you can have, we have clusters of cameras out there on the ranch. And you can have, you know, there's some places we have as many as 8 or 9 cameras clustered together, and it will rant. It's not just one camera. It's not like we have a faulty camera that's got a loose ground in it somewhere. You know, today it's camera number 7, and in a couple days we're having problems with camera number 9, and then it's camera number 1, and the other cameras are running fine. So it's a ongoing basis. It happens weekly. On a regular basis, but that being said, it's transient. It comes and goes, and you know, we measure it, then we don't. So that seems to be the story of the ranch.
Any strange experiences for you, Bryant, or anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just necessarily you know, like small electronic equipment. Tom will attest to the fact that we lose batteries on our big equipment all the time. We're talking big car batteries, UTV batteries, things like that. Inexplicably, we'll just, one day it runs fine, cranks right up. The next day it's dead as a doorknob, and you can put a charger on it and it won't even hold a charge anymore, and you have to replace the battery from it. We've all had experiences with our own personal electronic devices, phones, things of that nature, where much the same as he mentioned, you'll have a full charge and within minutes, your phone will turn off and it shows 0 battery, turn off. And then there's other times where it will do that, but it's almost like it's tricking your phone to think that it doesn't have any battery, because then finally you plug it back in and turn it on, and it shows that you've still got 100%. It's all kinds of crazy stuff. That's the thing that's frustrating about the ranch, is just when you think, okay, maybe I've got this pinpointed to one particular thing, then something else happens. You know, while we were filming the show, we did a whole segment of ground penetrating radar stuff up on top of the mesa, and we couldn't use it because, you know, the memory cards in the camera and in the sound equipment were fried without explanation. And so, yeah, it's day to day. It's every single day, it seems like, and it moves around. One part of the ranch may be fine, another part may not. So yes, I think the electromagnetic phenomenon is one of the main things that has had us perplexed since day one when we walked on the property.
And what are your thoughts on it, Jim?
Pretty much the same as, Tom and Brian. It's very random. I know personally I've been out there, the ranch car, which is a GMC Denali. I can remember about ready to leave one evening, and all the filaments, the lights blow out in the car. You know, you take it back to the dealership, Jerry Ziner down here, and they go, I've never seen anything like this. You know, and I'm not trying to prefabricate. This is not a figment of our imagination. This is reality. You know, you see compasses, they get very disoriented, batteries that are drained. And you know, you get people on there and they think that all of a sudden the boogeyman's going to come out, you know, because they're there. But again, I can tell you, and I've witnessed situations where people have come on the ranch and then days or weeks later, all of a sudden they're haunted. And so, you know, call it hitchhikers. I always tell people when you're going on the ranch, try to clear your mind. Try to be as transparent as you can. Try not to go onto the ranch with a lot of excess baggage. You know, if you're going through some personal issues, whether it be worry or emotional challenges that we all have right now with this COVID-19, but if you can leave it at the gate and try to be very clear with yourself, it'll weigh a lot better on you, if not now, but later. So, I walk into that ranch each and every time I have the opportunity to be on it. Try to be as clear as I can. Try not to be in judgment. Embrace it with a level of harmony. And again, treat people like you want to be treated. That grounds the same way.
Now, one of my favorite topics here on my show is UFO activity and anomalous lights in the sky, and that's one of the most prevalent activity there as well. I'm wondering how much has the UFO activity increased any since you've started doing the research there? And the second part is, how much of it do you think could possibly just be military activity? I'll start with you, Thomas.
So what I tell people is this is a hard question for me, because before I came on the ranch, this was not my focus. This was not what I observed. So since I've been on the ranch, yes, I have seen a lot of sightings, a lot of unexplained sightings. Is it because it increased, or is it just because I notice it now? So I can't say for sure whether it's uptick. I will say that in the last, probably in the last 4 weeks, I have seen some incredible unexplained sightings. One of them was just here. I guess it would have been 2 weeks ago today. Over on part of the ranch, I had another witness with me and had six white craft go right above my head, about 200 feet up off the ground. Was able to get some video of them. Very, very fascinating. So I've seen the last couple weeks, and it's been great, because every time I've seen a sighting, I've had other witnesses there, and we've been able to even get some of it on phone. So that's fascinating. And it definitely is very, very active right now. A lot of sightings.
And the second part is, how much would you say, or if you could say any, would be military activity in the area?
So when I came on the ranch, UFOs was actually this one thing that I can swallow. That's the one thing I can wrap my arms around. And that's simply because my brain just looks at it and says, you know, a drone would have been a UFO 10 years ago. We didn't know that we had aircraft that could maneuver like that. And so UFOs have been easy for me to wrap my arms around and say, well, that's just experimental aircraft with the military, or, you know, secret project. That being said, I've seen a couple sightings now that if we have that kind of technology to maneuver around like that, you know, we were talking about this one day at lunchtime with Travis off camera. We were just sitting around the table, and you know, Travis works I believe it's in the armies. He's a civilian contractor to something with the defense. But you know, he said a line. He's like, you know what? Because that's what I was just trying to say. It's just military, Travis. And he's like, no, listen. If you have craft that have that kind of maneuverability, they're so far advanced that would be criminal. That, you know, if we're that so far advanced in our military, it's almost criminal to be that far ahead. And that kind of stuck with me. And I have a hard time believing. I do believe some of it is. Matter of fact, I would say that some of the ones that I've seen in the past couple weeks probably are military. We got a pretty good shot. Not myself, but a friend got a pretty clear shot of a couple stealth fighters in the area a week ago. And so, you know, there is military presence out here. And I do attribute some of that. But some of the ones I've seen, I have a hard time believing that our military's got that kind of technology.
Very good. And any sightings or particular instances in, you'd like to talk about, Bryant?
You know, it's interesting because as much time as I've spent on the ranch, I didn't really have a whole lot of experiences. And, you know, I never wanted to chalk something up that maybe was something unless I, you know, felt really strongly about it because I didn't want to, you know, be that person that was looking at everything and, you know, claiming that it was something that was out there. I didn't want to become part of the narrative, if you will, I guess. So, when we, I mean, and, you know, the viewers of the show and people that have seen it, you know, when we were launching rockets, during episode 4, I believe it is, of the show, and we had, you know, multiple UFOs show up. It's unfortunate that the cameras couldn't get around quickly enough to really truly see, you know, how spectacular it truly was. I mean, we caught some of it on our surveillance with limited, but, you know, I am not one to make things up, and I will, you know, take it to my grave, and it's etched in my memory forever of what I saw, and it shook me. I mean, you could see my vitals went all crazy and everything like that. And because it truly, my logical, rational mind couldn't make sense of what I was seeing. And so, you know, since then, I've seen a few other things, and maybe it's just opened my eyes to it. I don't know. But there's definitely something going on. And as Thomas mentioned, the way that these things move and they come in and out of you, I think that's the most, you know, I think that's the thing that makes me think it's not military. Is there will be something there one moment, and then in a flash it'll be gone, or it will dissipate down into a speck and disappear. And you know, and the way that they stay in one place, you'd think if it was a military craft or something of that nature, it wouldn't be able just to stay in one spot and then dart from point A to point B so quickly and then be gone out of sight. So I agree with Tom, though, in the fact that there is a big military presence, and I think some of, you know, the things that we do see may be attributed to that, but I know that there are other things in that area that cannot be chalked up to just a military presence unless they have got the wool pulled over all of our eyes with what with the technology that they have.
Wow, that's fascinating. What are your thoughts on that, Jim?
Well, I was out there that day. I wasn't out there on the helicopter pad where they were launching. That was part of the science of it. But I was in the front yard when several of the producer and several of the camera people came running around the front, just overwhelmed. You know, can't believe we've caught this on camera. I am personally an experiencer myself. I've been in and out of Area 51 many times. I've sat on the military advisory board with the state of Utah with Senator Jake Garn. I know what I have seen personally. And so this stuff that Bryant and Tom are talking about is, again, not a figment of anybody's imagination. That's caught on camera. I'm one of the guys that was out there one evening and saw those red eyes, as we've talked about, that as far as I'm concerned, is not from this earth. You know, it wasn't a mountain lion. It wasn't a big owl. It was something that made me quake to the point that I wasn't willing to approach it. And, you know, my prior life was a military police officer. There's things on that ranch that made me think twice. As I've said before, it's not for the faint of heart. But this is not scripted. This is a reality. You know, I've worked with Tom and Bryant for years. They're not trying to play movie star here. This is real stuff.
Now, the very first scene on the first episode involved a cattle mutilation. The animal lying there very stiffly on the floor, and everyone, you know, kind of being told to stay away in case of radioactivity. I'm wondering how much how often does this happen? Have you lost a lot of animals, and have you gained any type of explanation at all as to what could be occurring with these animal mutilations? Let's start with Thomas.
So the answer to that is we've had cattle on that. Well, last year would have been the third year that we've had the ranch and brought cattle onto it to graze. The cow that you saw in that first episode is the first loss that we have had on the ranch. So I'm not aware of any other cattle dying during their time on the ranch. It looks like from the teasers I saw you last night that that'll be addressed more in the next episode. So probably have to be limited in what I can say about what we have found out. But it's just like anything that happens on the ranch. The part that drives you crazy on the ranch is there's so many little things that take place that can just be chalked up to pure coincidence. I can tell you, living out here in the basin, having grown up on the farm and being around, my father-in-law runs 300 head of cattle. And so I have lots of exposure to him. Cows die. That's part of ranching. Any rancher loses loss of life. So out at the ranch, it becomes what you see there is it's unlike the other farmers. When we lose an animal, we really need to investigate, dive down and say, was this just natural causes? You know, like that happens sometimes. Or was there something more sinister behind this? And so, you know, on the ranch, every little thing that happens, sometimes things that seem like coincidence, that as you start to map them out and as you start to keep a log and keep track and you start to dive down into details, things that appear harmless on the surface start to take a different form when you start looking at the big picture. So, it'll be interesting to see. I'm watching these episodes with you guys. Obviously, I was there. I know the behind-the-scenes stuff, but it's always interesting to see Hollywood's, you know, the editor's take on this and how they piece it together. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of your personal experiences, possibly some of the most profound that you can talk about so far. Now, Thomas, I do want to get to your head injury because that's very profound. But besides that, I also heard you talking on an interview about disembodied voices that really got to you. Could you talk a little bit about that? Has that happened more than once? And what are these voices telling you?
Yeah, so I've heard this particular, I will call it a disembodied voice. I'll go with that. The first time it happened, I couldn't be sure whether it was an audible voice or an internal voice I was just hearing in my head. The circumstances allowed for it to probably be either. I know that it was a very clear voice, a very clear command, and that command was telling me not to go any further as I was driving across the ranch. The second time that I had that experience was in the exact same location on the ranch. This time, the circumstances would not have permitted for that to be inaudible because of the noise of the equipment. I had my earbuds in listening to an audiobook. Just because of the environment, you could have been standing 2 feet away from me and shouted, and I probably couldn't have heard you. And so I know for a fact that one was internal. And then I was there in the command center, and I actually happened to have my wife with me that night. That was one of those strange circumstances where some of the cameras took themselves down. Eric notified me that we were having some fishy things happen, some strange things happening with the cameras. It was about midnight, so I grabbed my wife and said, "You're coming with me." And we went out there. As we pull in to the command center, you can see it. Literally, as we pull in, these cameras come back up. And we go inside. Eric asked me to do some specific tasks as far as securing the footage to make sure that we didn't lose it. The logs as to whether we'd been hacked or there was files, you know, whatever it might be. And while we were in the process of doing that, we heard several that night we heard someone run across what used to be, we called it Bigelow's bedroom. It's now the control center, the command room that you see on television. We heard it sounded like somebody stomped across the room in there, and then we heard someone slam. I say someone. I just, that's my terminology. We heard a noise in the back bedroom across on the other side that sounded like a cord being slammed against the wall. Very, very loud. And then the final straw was we were sitting there at the computer trying to get things to load, and we both heard the exact voice that told us we needed to leave immediately. And so I heard it. I went to reach for the mouse to try to eject the hard drive that I was downloading it on, and it repeated itself and said, "You need to leave now," at which point we jumped up and got off of there as quick as we could. And had a malfunction with my cell phone at the same time that all this is going on. So very, very strange night. And the times that there's, I followed the commands the first time. The second time I ignored it, and I continued to drive further onto the ranch, and it came accompanied with a feeling of terror that I can't, there are not words to describe that feeling of literally, it's like some type of psychological effect. I mean, I was shaking so bad I could barely control myself, and continued to shake with this terror for some time after I got off the ranch. And so it is very real, and you know, heard it there again. Don't know how to explain it.
Wow, that's insane. What about you, Brian? Any disembodied voices or other profound experiences you'd like to share?
I haven't necessarily heard the voices like Thomas has. And for the longest time, I used to joke that the ranch either didn't like me or it liked me a lot, because I'd be out there and not have any experiences, and then I'd leave for a day and all kinds of crazy stuff would happen. But one of the experiences that I can talk about, and there's a couple, but I'm not sure if, you know, they're going to play into the series, so I apologize. But one of the experiences that I had was I was, you know, when I'm on duty out there, I sleep in the command center, and I was there with Caleb, our other security guard that you've probably seen, and we were in separate bedrooms, and I was laying there trying to go to sleep, and I was just, I think I was reading a book on my phone, and it was as if, and we were the only ones in the building, and it was as if someone came up and kneed the side of my bed, and it shook and jostled the whole thing. I mean, if you have children and they've come and crammed into the side of your bed, it's infuriating, and it shook the entire bed when I, you know, it startled me. And so I got up and I walked in the other room and asked Caleb, and I said, were you up moving around or anything? And he looked at me like, no, I'm just laying here. And so I told him, I relayed the story to him that, you know, something had physically shaken my bed to the point where, you know, it jostled me and it startled me quite a bit. And so I thought, well, you know, chalk it up to just nothing. And I went back and laid down again, and maybe 5 minutes later, Caleb came walking in, and he's a big guy. This is a big Marine burly dude, and his eyes were like the size of golf balls. And he looked at me and he's like, the same thing just happened to my bed. What in the world is going on? And so, you know, it wasn't anything crazy. It frightened me, certainly. It was a rough night to sleep after having that happen, knowing that it wasn't just in my mind, but it happened to both of us. So things like that. And there's been times where I've been around different parts of the property and all the hair on my body will just stand on end, and I'll get the most ominous feeling of just, call it just a primal instinct to get out of that area as quickly as possible, because it's almost like an impending, you know, bad thing is going to happen. And then there's other times where I get the opposite feeling, an overwhelming just feeling of comfort, and I feel so good. My father passed 21 years ago, and I've told dozens of people, Skinwalker Ranch is the place on earth where I feel the closest to my late father than anywhere else. I feel his presence. I feel a closeness there. I can't describe it. You know, I don't know what it is, but for the longest time, you know, I just, you know, never had anything. And now I constantly feel, you know, somewhat of his presence. So, you know, there's some other things that have happened. Again, I wish I could share more with you, and maybe, you know, in a future date, if you'll have me back, I can. Yeah, there's definitely things at work, and I'll just say there's, you know, there's only a certain number of people that I trust as much as I do Tom and Jim and, you know, our ranch family. And I can tell you, these guys are not the types to make this sort of stuff up. I've spoken with Tom, and I've seen Tom after he's had experiences, and there's no doubting the things that he's seen and felt, and I can tell you, I'll take it to my grave again, like I said with the, you know, with the UFO experience, that there is no disputing what I've seen and what I've felt, and I'll take a lie detector test if I have to. But it's real. There's real stuff.
That is crazy. And Jim, any experiences you would like to share?
Well, as I've always said, you know, that ranch is not for the faint of heart. You know, I coming out of the tail end of Vietnam, I worked with canines and military police officers, and they would put us. My last duty station was in Denver, Lorry Air Force Base, and we had areas out there where you needed a top secret clearance and ammo dumps and 959 building, nuclear weapons, and for whatever reason, you know, you deal with it. Maybe it was through age or whatever, but the rest of the story and the reality of that ranch, it's got a certain frequency of vibration that you can actually be out there on what I call the Pope Mobile, riding around, and I can actually feel a frequency in my sinuses where it is just something is pushing on me. But I probably haven't had the experiences that Bryant and Thomas have had, but there's definitely a level of respect I have for that ranch.
Now, I'd like to talk a bit about some of the injuries that have been experienced, starting with Thomas's head injury. It is the one of the most terrifying and fascinating things I've seen at the same time. Thomas, if you could tell us a little bit about how that happened. I know you were digging, and then what happened after that?
Well, so the interesting thing is that my injury occurred during a time period for which I was doing some pretty extensive excavating on the ranch, actually changing the topography of some of it. I was building some trails so that Bryant and Caleb and the security team could quickly access some of the areas of the ranch that were previously only accessible on foot. And so I was doing some extensive, you know, it wasn't digging fence holes or irrigation ditches. It was using equipment. It was scarring the land. It was pretty extensive. And during this time period, yes. Now my injury started actually on a day that I had not been on the ranch. Talking with Dr. Segala, though, from the investigative part of my injury, it's an injury that would have taken time for those symptoms to start to manifest. It's not something that just was, you know, instant and, you know, not like getting shot in the back of the head. And it was something that started, it's easy for me to remember because it started on my birthday. And I went to bed that night and I just had a sore spot on the back of my head. Very similar to what you'd experience with a bruise. It was just tender to the touch. And when I laid my head back on the pillow, I felt it. I thought, that's strange. And when I woke up Sunday morning, the following morning, that spot had swollen up to where it felt like a pretty good goose egg. And then over the course of the next couple of days, through some very traumatic physical injuries and then also some psychological injuries that I haven't spoken about publicly yet. I'm not after getting a little taste of the public on social media, while most people are wonderful and great, there's also a lot of those that I'm just not public with a lot of my injury. But I suffered some deep physical things. It got to the point that by Tuesday, my head had completely, that my scalp had completely detached from my skull. And really the only thing that was still attached was just right here around my mouth, up around my eyes. But it even come down underneath my, you know, under my eyebrows here and detached. And it was just completely swollen. And it was a scary time. Very, very traumatic. My doctors didn't know what was going on. We ran almost 4 dozen different tests trying to, you know, limit. We were able to rule out bug bites. We were able to rule out any kind of trauma. You know, there's no damaged the tissue and that would accompany a traumatic head injury. And then every test they ran, my doctor would come in and shake his head and say, "You're the healthiest sick person I've ever met." So, you know, they're very baffled by it.
And there is a still ongoing investigation about it?
Yeah, so almost immediately upon being released out of the hospital, because of my association with the ranch and Brandon being very concerned about my welfare and Jim, Jim was right there in the hospital and visited me while I was going through this. But because of my association with the ranch, my injury caught the attention of a lot of different individuals, and I was quickly approached by individuals that are familiar with this space, and neurologists, and individuals that have various backgrounds, and investigation started almost immediately, and since then I have taken more MRIs and CAT scans and x-rays and lab tests than I can even begin to remember. And so it does continue to this day. They're still trying to understand what took place. And it may be something that is going to be ongoing, and we may have to add pieces of the puzzle as they come available, either through other injuries or better science. I don't know. But yeah, it is still ongoing.
Now, Bryant, in the first episode, you were warning against the dangers of digging. Could you talk a little bit about that and if there has been any other injuries or strange events surrounding digging in the area?
Yeah, so I got beat up pretty good. In the, you know, the public eye and things like that because of my stance against the digging. And I think a lot of that came from, you know, going back during the Robert Bigelow era of the ranch prior to Brandon purchasing it. We didn't inherit any real data. We didn't inherit any sort of, you know, findings that they had or anything like that. We inherited basically a few stories here and there, but one of the underlying things above it all, they didn't share anything, but the one thing they said is, whatever you do, you know, don't dig on the property. Don't dig. It triggers this phenomenon, and it's usually bad results that come from it. So you couple that with the fact that we have Tom having his injury that there is no explanation for, but it's somewhat correlated to the fact of all of the work that he was doing on the property and disturbing the earth. You know, Brandon's mandate to me was, you know, I'm okay with all kinds of science and things like that, but I prefer not to really, you know, to take Travis Taylor's famous line, poke the hornet's nest. And we learned that, or we felt that one of the knowns that we were actually told by the Bigelow folks is not to dig. And so, you know, I took that stance. I was told to take that stance. And one thing you learn about me is, you know, if I feel strongly about somebody or something, and, you know, I'm a protector at heart. That's what I want to do, is I want to make sure the people I care about are taken care of and that they're not hurt. And if by digging that was going to stir up trouble and cause injury and cause harm. You couple that with the boss telling me, you know, I don't necessarily want a bunch of digging going on. And then you mixed again, Tom, who I care about, in there having had an injury that is possibly associated with that, then yes, I took a strong stance. And, you know, I don't know. Again, we didn't inherit a lot of what happened during the Bigelow era when they performed those types of experiments. And so it was a warning. And because we had so little to go on and we knew so little about the place, you know, that definitely was a stance that we were going to take. And, you know, I was somewhat, I guess I felt justified in my stance when we had Larry Sespooch, our Native American friend that Jim was able to introduce us to, come out. And he talked about the dangers of disturbing the earth and stirring up things, and that you need to do that with reverence and, you know, all that different kind of stuff. So, yeah, I took a beating. I still take a beating when it comes to the digging thing, but I'm not sorry for it, because the last thing, I would have felt even worse had someone been injured or gotten hurt because of an activity that I went ahead and just said, yeah, sure, go ahead and do it.
And Jim, what are your thoughts about digging in the area?
Well, you know, I was obviously there when Tom went through what he went through. It was pretty profound. It hit very close to home. I witnessed it. You know, I've been around friendly fire and a few things, being a military police officer, witnessing. And as Brian has said, we're family. So I take this very, very personal. As far as the digging on it, you know, I know that as far as title, on title was supposed to be digging. I didn't know if it was associated because it was a burial ground or whatever. But the reality of it is, you know, I have to back Brian 110%. You know, I mean, that was the feedback that he got from Fugle. And so you want to respect that. That's what he does. But I walk very reverently on that ground out there. I don't take it for granted. So, you know, I'm here at this point at a crossroads, basically following the lead of Bryant. So yeah.
Well, very good.
I wanna
Chris. Yeah, go ahead. I'll let Thomas finish, and then Chris. Unfortunately, I'm gonna have to sign off here shortly.
Yeah, yeah. I understand. You have some things to do, and I appreciate you staying for the amount of time you could. That was.
I'm happy to, and I'm sorry that I messed up and made a conflict here. So I apologize. But
no worries at all. I appreciate you staying for as long as you could.
Well, and on that, I've got a low battery that I'm dealing with over here, and so we're gonna try to see if we can hook in here for a second. It's always a treat, Chris, personally, to be with you and to exchange thoughts and ideas. And anytime I can.
Well, I'd really like to just get one more question from the both of you, as long as you can stay. Sure. It's about next season and the possibilities, if there will be another season, if you could give us any information or teasers at all. Let's start with Thomas.
I'll answer that by saying I don't think anything's been officially announced. I will just say that you know, you can go on the internet and look at the ratings. We've had amazing ratings. We've had some very loyal viewers that tune in every week, and so the networks are obviously looking to air those shows that are bringing the ratings, and so it would just stand to reason that. I think they're happy with what we've done, and hopefully we can continue to take everybody on the journey with us. So science is going to continue whether the show does or not, and hopefully we can bring people along with us through this medium.
Very good. Any final words, Bryant, before you head out?
No. Thank you again, and you know, to echo Thomas's sentiments, we're going to be working on that ranch, you know, long after anything of like this. You know, television production, whatever it is. And we hope that, you know, this provides a forum for, you know, people to see some of the insights there. It's an interesting place that we've barely scratched the surface on trying to understand. And I hope you know, that we do have the opportunity to show more and let America and the world really, it's been amazing to see the outpouring from the world, their excitement for, you know, what's happening at Skinwalker Ranch. And, you know, we hope to be good caretakers of it and make sure that we, you know, do things in the right way, in an honest way. And I think that, you know, if we do that, then, you know, there will be more opportunities to see that type of thing. But thanks again. Again, I'm happy to come on again. You're always great.
Definitely.
You've been a definite champion of us and the ranch and everything else. And it's a pleasure. So thank you again.
Yeah, we'll definitely do it again. Thanks for coming on.
All right, you bet.
And Jim, what are your final thoughts for the night?
I'll tell you, it's a moving target out there. You know, the reality of it is as I've said, the word random comes up. I don't think you can go out there and premeditate what's going to happen. It just happens. But it's definitely a crossroads. There's the spirit versus the science, and I'm a big believer of the science, but I'm also a big believer of the spiritual side of it. I think you need to, not to be redundant here, but I think you need to embrace it with a level of respect. And with that in mind, I think that we'll have a level of compatibility between the science and the spirit. So as long as the ranch is willing to embrace and invite me on the ranch, you know, I want to be a part of the team or the family. And right now there's some really good synergy and a lot happening on that ranch that hopefully the cameras will capture and we can reveal or share with the audience. So we do appreciate you, Chris. You're an easy guy to have an interview with. You have an innate ability to put us at ease. And anytime that I can be a part and participate with you and Bryant and Tom, I'm pleased to do it.
Definitely. It was a great time. I thank you both for taking the time to come on and share your experiences. And I do definitely hope to see a second season of The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. Gentlemen, thank you again, and you have an excellent rest of your night.
Thank you so much. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye now.